From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Hong Kong has been home to protests since the spring, and for the entire time, the media here in the U.S. have been covering it as a case of police repression of an indigenous democratic movement. However, the filter of the U.S. media is exactly that, a filter. Very rarely do American audiences get to see the news through the filter of China's media. The following segment was produced by China's global television network, CGTN, and it tells some things about the protests that are not being told by the Western media. The piece makes a number of references to NED, that is the National Endowment for Democracy, from Washington, D.C.
The protests in Hong Kong have been going on for over 2 months amid increasing violence. How did we get here? What triggered them? And why are they turning chaotic? It all started with the murder of Poon Hui Wing, a pregnant Hong Kong woman who was ruthlessly strangled by her boyfriend Chen Tong Kai in Taiwan last year. The suspect fled back to Hong Kong after the murder. Chen was sentenced to jail for 29 months after being charged with money laundering. His killing went unpunished because Hong Kong and the island have no extradition agreement. The case showed that Hong Kong had a legal loophole that needed to be fixed. The Hong Kong SAR government submitted a Fugitive Offenders and Mutual Legal Assistance in Criminal Matters Legislation Amendment Bill 2019 to the Legislative Council for approval in April this year. The bill aimed to establish a mechanism for transfers of fugitives for the Chinese mainland, Macau and Taiwan, which are not covered in Hong Kong's existing laws. The proposed amendment was designed to be only applicable to 37 categories of extraditable crimes, including murder, kidnapping and rape. It was a common revision of existing laws, so why was then Hong Kong plagued by, sometimes violent, protests? On June 19th, Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi said that some Western forces are using this issue. What are those Western forces, and who wants to stop these amendments? Hong Kong is home to thousands of intelligence officers, earning the nickname the Asian Division of CIA. Agents from the UK and the US operate in Hong Kong without a single worry because the Chinese mainland has no jurisdiction over the city in accordance with the One Country, Two Systems. The Chinese mainland is not able to bring these agents to justice if they commit offenses as long as they are in Hong Kong, even though it's part of China. If the law changed, Hong Kong would no longer be a haven for criminals. You might say this is pure speculation, but let's take a look at this NGO, National Endowment for Democracy. The NED is a self-proclaimed organization for supporting freedom around the world, but the truth couldn't be further from that. In fact, it's a second CIA, according to one of its founders, Alan Weinstein. A lot of what we do today was done covertly 25 years ago by the CIA. The biggest difference is that when such activities are done overtly, the flap potential is close to zero. But what's the connection between the NED and Hong Kong protests? On May 14th, Hong Kong opposition figure Martin Lee had a meeting with NED representatives Lee Chiu-kien, Mak Ying-ting and Nathan Law in Hong Kong. 2 days later, Lee met U.S. Secretary of State Michael Pompeo in Washington, who expressed his concern about the Hong Kong government's proposed fugitive bill. The fugitive bill caused concern among some Hong Kong residents. Despite authorities' assurances, they still worried that Hong Kong is losing its autonomy to Beijing. Opposition factions took advantage of this worry to instigate instability. On June 12th, A demonstration against the fugitive bill took place near the Legislative Council building in Hong Kong. There was a fierce clash between protesters and police. On July 7th, Hong Kong SAR Chief Executive Carrie Lam said the work on the bill was a total failure.
The bill is dead.
But protests didn't stop, getting more violent instead. On August 6th, two separate meetings took place between a US political counselor and separatist leaders, according to Hong Kong's Wenwei Po newspaper. Julie Ide, who works at the US Consulate General in Hong Kong, was caught on camera meeting with opposition figures Martin Lee and Anson Chan. Later that day, Ide also met Joshua Huang, one of the leaders of the Occupy Central movement in 2014. But long before those reports, growing evidence pointed at the US as the hand-sowing discord in Hong Kong after US politicians met with Lee and other Hong Kong opposition leaders, including Jimmy Lai. Lai, the founder of Apple Daily, was also spotted on August 3rd meeting with a foreign man in a restaurant saying, "Welcome to Hong Kong and well done with the situation." That man in the photo is Mark Simon, the right hand of Jimmy Lai, who has been called a man of mystery with ties to CIA. Even though he denies those accusations, a report by the South China Morning Post said Simon's father worked with the CIA for 35 years, and that Simon himself interned with the US intelligence. While the agenda of the meetings might not have been publicized, the 2014 Occupy Central movement could provide insight into understanding what's happening in Hong Kong now. Before the Occupy Central movement, Martin Lee, Anson Chan and Jimmy Lai went to Washington to meet with the NET and US politicians and plan their so-called independence movement. The NET denied meeting with Martin Lee. But Michael Pillsbury, a former advisor to the US Department of Defense, said on Fox News that the NET was pretty much involved.
We also have funded millions of dollars of programs through the National Endowment for Democracy. So in that sense, the Chinese accusation is not totally false.
So how exactly is NET involved? In 2003, the NET led a massive march in Hong Kong. That's according to the organization, believe it or not. In a newsletter, the organization listed its work in Hong Kong as part of protests cited under the subheadline, "Examples of Past and Present Programs." According to the NET official website, the organization started donating money to Hong Kong since 1995. Three main groups in Hong Kong have received money from the NET. They are the American Center for International Labor Solidarity, the Hong Kong Human Rights Monitor, and the National Democratic Institute for International Affairs. A paper of congressional hearings on the oversight of the NET held in 1986 shows that the NET was established to distribute US government funds. It claims that the NET doesn't meddle in the internal politics of other countries but instead assists democratic people abroad. The NET's investments in Hong Kong reached a new high in 2014. According to Oriental Daily, opposition figure Lee Chung-yen, as an agent of Jimmy Lai, asked the NDI for 1.3 million Hong Kong dollars to promote the Occupy Central movement. And Lai has given 9 opposition groups and 14 separatists over 40 million Hong Kong dollars in the past 3 years. Before setting its sights on China, the NET destroyed the stability of other countries. Stephen Kinzer, a senior fellow in international and public affairs at Brown University, wrote in the Boston Globe that the NET has sought to influence elections in many countries, including Mongolia. It also has built anti-Russia movements in nearby countries. He noted that the group should more properly be called the National Endowment for Attacking Democracy. So, do you still think that the protests in Hong Kong are pro-democracy?
Here is the unfiltered version from Hong Kong police of what's been happening over the last week in their city. 15 police officers were injured during Sunday's protests in Sai Kung, 32 protesters were arrested Saturday and 54 on Sunday. Police condemned the violence, saying that it's pushed the city into a very dangerous situation. This edition of the daily news conference being given by Hong Kong police took place on Monday.
And they will take turn to speak, and then we will have Q&A. And please raise your hand before asking questions. And also, please introduce your organizations, and please do not ask more than 3 questions. On Saturday and Sunday, the violent protest was already briefed yesterday during the briefing. And yesterday in San Sui Po and Wan Lai Sin, we saw some violent protests. And we condemn such irresponsible behavior. Today, we'd like to make some clarification on some accusations against police. And then we would also talk about some processes of public concern. Yesterday in San Sui Po and Wan Dai Sim, we saw some behavior that caused some public concern. In San Sui Po police station, and people, rioters, actually aim laser beams at officers. On Imzo Street, barricades were set to block traffic, and there were some clashes with the people, and protesters actually draw graffiti on the wall and destroy some facilities, and later on aimed at the exterior wall with laser beams. We actually issued warning many times before we dispersed the cloud. And we saw that the protest has expanding to more residential areas. Now, this already has transformed to destruction and harassment. Many innocent residents were rounded and were harassed. Many public facilities were destroyed. This has actually deviated from the original grievances and pursuits they talked about. Now, this has become irrational and extreme clashes, and the violence has also escalated. The protesters disrupted the public and actually violated the rights of freedom to public assembly. Now, we've seen severe bodily harm to innocent people, and the protesters hurl bricks, arrows, and bows against policemen. All these weapons are extremely dangerous, and even can endanger policemen's life. And we also saw harm done to innocent residents. For example, on the overhead bridge, we saw protesters set fires to the policemen and also hurl petrol bomb at reporters, residents, and policemen. And many people injured by the petrol bomb. And we condemn all those violence, and we will not tolerate. This will not be tolerated in any civilized society. And we cannot legalize and justify these kind of behavior. Well, first, I would like to talk about yesterday's operation. Yesterday in San Sui Po District, we arrested 2 people, one 19-year-old man who assaulted the police, and he failed to show any ID, and also a 19-year-old woman who is also a suspect of assaulting police. On top of that, we charged a man with the offense of assaulting police, and also this happened in the West Kowloon. We also charged the man with participating in riot, and at 3 in a court, he will be brought to the court. And in Kowloon 1 district, and on Wai Ying Street, they actually blocked the road and also hurled petrol bombs at some of our colleagues. Now we charge him with the offense of participating in riot. And as mentioned by many policemen, for all the violence and unlawful behavior, we will not tolerate, and we would pursue the lawful procedure. In the past few days, we arrested 13 people, including 11 men and 2 women, and between age of 9 to 19 to 40. And they're charged with charges of possession of offensive weapon, frauds, assaulting police, etc., including on June 9th, the unlawful behavior against the Legislative Council, and June 1st, the destruction at Legislative Council, and on the 11th, the unlawful assembly, and also on August 13th, the unruly behavior in the airport. In the operation, no policeman was injured. On the ammunition side, yesterday we did not use any ammunition. So for these two events, I would like to make some clarification. We noticed that online there are many pictures circulating. It is claimed, and that they receive messages from the policemen whether they participated in protest. And we have to clarify, these messages do not come from the PR Department of Police. Earlier, Mr. Fong talked about all this accusation of police brutality. I would like to clarify. And in the previous briefings, we mentioned the reason why we will arrest some people in the protest is because we know that we have to consider the capability of different police stations. And as for the number of the arrestees and detainees, we have to balance between different districts. In those bigger districts, we can actually be able to arrest more people there. And as for the accusation of police brutality, this is a very serious accusation. We have to make clarification on August 11th evening time. In Simulan police station, we actually arrested 50 people. Those detainees were sent to Simulan police station in different batches. And our director at the police station said that they will interview them one by one, confirm their identity, heard their needs, for example, make complaints or receive medical treatment or hiring lawyers. And director is sure that these 50 people who were sent to the police station, immediately some of them raised the requirement to see a doctor. And the director was sure that their injury was caused during the arrest, not in the police station. As I mentioned before, about 30 detainees asked to see a doctor. Due to the large number, we communicated our colleagues at the ambulance department, and we would evaluate their injury level and then deal with them accordingly. And their safety is also our concern. We will definitely allocate personnel to send them to see a doctor. They will be accompanied by 2 to 3 policemen. Well, when traffic accident or other public accident happens, we will also assess the injured, see whose injury should be prioritized. And some of them are sent to the hospital. Most of the people are actually only sustained very minor injuries, like swollen, pain, scratches. And 6 people actually sustained some fractured bones, which are more serious. And we did not receive any complaints of badgering or beating. As I mentioned before, for every detainee, we would issue a detain notification, which states specifically their rights, for example, hiring an attorney, receiving medical treatment, seeing a doctor, etc. We have always respected the rights of detainees. After sent to Saint Wulan, the personnel there would immediately ask them if they need a lawyer. In the evening, we received we saw some public defenders, meaning lawyers provided by the court, not hired by the detainees. And we actually discussed the arrangement with them. Some lawyers went to the police station to see those detainees. Due to the limited room we have in the police station, we hope that they arrange one-on-one meetings, and this also concerns their privacy. And if everyone needs 30 minutes, then in total there are 50 detainees. We only have a few rooms available. And then we have to arrange it according to our resources. And so some of them do not mind to see the lawyer later. So we did ask their preference. It's not true that we do not allow them to see the doctor or lawyer. And if they specify the needs for certain lawyers, we will definitely provide them with the lawyer they needed. So, as we introduce our policies regarding detaining or arrest, we always balance between 3 aspects. First is security, second is individual safety, third is the rights of detainee. And for detainees, we feel responsible. We also need to safeguard the safety of those detainees and other people. So according to their injury and the facts, we have to make sure none of them have possessed any weapons that may hurt others. And secondly, for the evidence related to their offense or other offenses, third, we need to check their belongings. So there are 3 levels of investigation. First is that they do need to see doctors. First level is they do need to take off their clothes. And second is they don't need to take off the clothes. Instead, they have to take off all those underwears. And our policemen will consider each case individually to determine the level. The factors include the offenses and their criminal record, and the violence during the arrest, whether they have tendency to hurt themselves or others, their behavior, and other demeanors. And I have to emphasize that detain policies is not aimed to punish them. Only when we have enough reasons, we will ask them to take off their underwears. And the rationale behind those policies can be found on the form in the brochure for detainees. If they have any objections against this policy or brochure, they can make complaints and we will make a final decision. If detainee refuse to cooperate, we will remind them and give the opportunity to comply with the requirements. If detainee insists on rejection, then we may charge them with interfering with police procedure and we may bring the charges against them. And then we may use the lowest level of force to force them to complete the procedures. And I refer you to the brochure and we would interpret and explain all those policies and also leave them with a copy. So for all the detained brochure is provided to them, and also all the procedures, the body search is done by the same-sex policeman personnel and is monitored by other policemen. And we would done the body search within a room with locks, and during the search, the room is locked and no unauthorized personnel is allowed into the room. And the detainee will be able to have the search with their privacy protected. So the search is similar to other counterparts abroad. So about this arrangement, we would ask their age, background, their mental capacity, and their body condition. We'll adjust our procedures accordingly to maintain and to meet their needs and respect their rights. And besides the search, for detainee that needs to take off their underwears, we would invite oversight from outside. And the whole procedure is transparent and is subject to public monitoring. If they wish to complain, we would deal with their complaints and will invest accordingly, fairly and impartially. For any complaints, we would deal with them seriously. I would like to take the opportunity to make two clarifications. First is last week, a lady organized a press conference, accused us with inappropriate investigation and search. And we actually looked back at those CCTV videos. She said she was asked to take off everything, including her underwear. And we checked our record and the form and confirmed the level for her was not taking off all the clothes and underwear. And according to our record, we did not ask her to take off her underwears. And we also checked the CCTV outside the room. The search only lasted 4 minutes. It's not 15 to 30 minutes, as she said.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.